championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on every podcasting platform you can find. Today we're going to be going over the spring practice notes. Injuries are piling up. We've seen it just kind of bombed us in the middle of the week. Talk about Caden Stearns, B.J. Foster, to Gabriel Floyd. Give our thoughts so far on what I'll call the problem units in linebacker and cornerback and just defensive back in general now, I guess. Joe has a little lineup segment for us, so we'll talk about the lineups, possible lineups, and who goes where coming into the 2019 season. Then get into baseball and what the hell just happened in the past week to Texas baseball. Like, just what is going on here? It's been a little crazy. It's been a little crazy so far this week with Pro Day, with Lima Sweet, the Cowboy stuff, which we're not going to touch. We're not touching that. Spring practices. Did I mention the pro day baseball? Joe, it's been a slap in the face of Texas news, and I don't know if it's slap in the. Oh, and then the NIT on top of it all. It's still going on. Texas is still in it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting time with Texas sports. Just a bunch of stuff going on at once. It's weird. Everybody thinks football season is the busiest time of year, but in reality, it's these March and April months. You got baseball, you got basketball in the postseason in some form or fashion, and you got what everybody really wants to know about in spring football. So,
and then recruiting on top of all of
and,
it.
Yeah, all the camps, all everything. It's busy, but it's a real fun time. And speaking of camps, I guess one thing we can really quickly touch on is it looks like Texas isn't skipping East Texas this year and is going to a Stephen F. Austin University camp. But I guess one little piece of breaking news.
Justin Wells is happy.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's better than going to Marshall because there's nothing in Marshall. Yeah, I guess, recruiting news always happens and that keeps us on our toes. But, you know, with spring football practice, that's become the main focus, especially with the NIT being what it is.
Yeah, the consolation tournament. Hey, but, you know, it's so far, I guess Shaka might be saving his job, which is something that we weren't seeing. But we'll see how far he gets and if he can finally beat TCU this year. We'll see. But yeah, you're right. Spring practice is the rage. I mean, it always is. And especially people are wanting to know, well, what's going on with the roster right now because of all of these injuries that are piling up. You have Caden Stearns out for 6 to 8 weeks after getting some minor surgery on his knee. B.J. Foster is out for – there's no timetable yet because of a concussion, took a knee to the helmet. The Skyrim joke, do you know what I'm talking about, Joe?
Arrow to the knee.
I used to play football for Texas, and then I took a helmet to the knee. Yeah. And then DeGabriel Floyd, it's the question everybody wants to know is what is going on with DeGabriel Floyd because he has not been practicing. He's not even suiting up really in pads to do anything right now. So what's going on with him? Because the linebacker room is something that is a big question mark for Texas. So we'll get into it. Let's go ahead and get into that. Break it down position by position. Caden Stearns, his second season here at Texas, his first as an upperclassman, he's out. He hasn't really completed a single spring yet. And, I mean, it doesn't – I don't think there's really anything to be concerned about. I think this is something that – well, from what I'm hearing, there was no avoiding this. It was either going to happen now or it was going to be like, can he get ready before fall camp has started? So better to get it out of the way now when, you know, he'll be ready for summer and he can get that all – figured out, he can get it strengthened up and then be ready for fall camp.
Yeah, the Caden Stearns injury sounded, I mean, what, tendonitis?
It sounds worse than it is.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not something you want to mess around with, but, you know, the fact that it was addressed right away, he's going to be ready for summer workouts. you know, it's that situation where, of course, you'd want him to be getting those reps. And unlike Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay, he doesn't have the same experience those guys too. And additional practices in the spring would have been very valuable for him. Even having the year that he had this past year. But it's something that, like you mentioned, needed to be addressed and was addressed. And so now he's missing those reps, but hopefully he comes back healthy and ready in time for next season. And, you know, like every injury that happens during spring ball, it's an opportunity for somebody else to come and, you know, taking that spot, put in a good spring. That could be Chris Brown, who's had a good spring, could be DeMarvian Overshown, who, you know, is trying to find his spot on the field. And another thing that I wanted to bring up is that this happened last year with running back, and although right. and Texas addressed it with a grad transfer who wasn't there in the spring. They addressed it with Keontae Ingram, who wasn't there in the spring. He didn't get there until the fall. So this isn't a situation that Texas is unfamiliar with, having a couple defensive backs. Now you've got Brandon Jones, BJ Foster, and Caden Stearns kind of on the mend. This isn't a situation that they're unfamiliar with. Maybe in this position, it's a little bit different, but this is the time where, you know, injuries, as long as it's not season threatening, and as long as recovery is, there's a clear path to recovery, it's not good news, but it's not the worst news in the world.
And for the safety position, unlike the running back position last year, safety position is kind of a known. And getting guys like Brandon Jones and Caden Stearns, and even B.J. Foster, having them not on the field, not that big of a concern because you know what they are. You know what they can give you. And it's not like, you know, they could use the practice. Everybody can use practice, right? Practice makes perfect, whatever. But it's not like not having them there is going to be a severe detriment to their game, especially when they have all of fall camp and summer to get back to where they need to be. So, you're right. Yeah, it's like the running back position they last year, but they're even in a better position than they were last year with the running backs. So, yeah, Caden Stearns is out. I'm not, you know. But the thing is for B.J. Foster, though, it's a little bit more of a question mark because he needed time to get used to the nickelback position, something he's not played before, but he looked really good starting off in the spring practice doing so. And I'm not sure, you know, and he had to figure out, the staff has to figure out between him and Josh Thompson and even Deshaun Jamison, who we'll get into later, but is looking pretty decent. So having him out kind of, you know, it makes the staff have to wait a while before they can decide, okay, this is where we are at in this position right now. It does postpone something that they were hoping they could get figured out earlier. But you know, this is how the cookie crumbles. Sometimes you get a knee to the helmet, and then that's just practice. If you don't do something like that, then all right, you're going to come out in your first game, and then these players aren't going to be ready to hit.
Yeah, exactly. And then to jump into the B.J. Foster news, I mean, it doesn't surprise that someone like him, who is as hard hitting, who's a bullet, you know, called an assassin, or missile, you know, so many different nicknames of speedy projectiles. This is his second concussion while at Texas. He suffered one last year in his freshman season, and obviously he suffered one here in the spring. Took that, you know, helmet to the knee to the helmet. You had me saying it that way.
Helmet to the knee.
Not something you want to mess around.
At Texas, then I took a helmet to the knee.
Exactly. Not something you want to mess around with, and I think for Foster more so than for Stearns, a little bit bigger loss because you're trying to train him at a new position for him at nickel. He had a little experience at Joker last year, but there are definitely some different responsibilities for that position. That one is definitely a little bit more concerning as far as Texas's season as compared to the Caden Stearns injury, especially when you think he's the guy that can be the nickel. And so far, Josh Thompson hasn't really taken the position and taken hold of it like, you know, some people thought and expected him to do at this juncture.
Right. And sometimes competition compels or propels other players to be better. So having Josh Thompson against B.J. Foster might have helped Josh Thompson. But not having B.J. Foster there anymore, you know, Josh Thompson's not really going to be pushed anymore, at least right now. So
You know, a place where you needed competition just lost a big competitor in BJ Foster. So again, not the best thing to happen. It's not dire though. It is not dire.
One, and like we mentioned, like Chris Brown is having a very good spring.
Oh yeah.
It makes that problem, at least in the boundary and free safety part of the argument, it makes that a little bit easier. But after Josh Thompson at nickel, I mean, where do you go? And this is going to be his opportunity to really take the position for himself. But after that, I mean, Deshaun Jameson, like you mentioned, he's been looking great, but he's been looking great at corner. And Texas doesn't really play a nickel corner. They play a nickel linebacker. So if Josh Thompson's not getting it and BJ Foster's not healthy enough to be on the field, that's going to become a problem for Texas if they don't know how to really address that. Now, maybe whenever Chris Adamora gets to Texas in the summertime, that's something that they could address. But in the spring, it's a very spring-specific problem, but it's a problem nonetheless.
Right. I do think having a guy like Chris Brown in there is actually really helping the team. I mean, Chris Brown is looking like he's actually finally starting to take a full grasp of this offense. I mean, the safety position, again, loaded. We talked about it earlier last week being an embarrassment of riches. Chris Brown is proving that. A guy who, you know, he was an afterthought last year, kind of. Mm-hmm. And this year, I mean, you've seen videos of him on the Texas football site. We saw it in person. Him taking, I forget who it was, and just pile driving them. At least I don't know. I saw it. Mm-hmm. You're giving me a face like, I didn't see that. I guess I saw it. But him taking a wide receiver and just lifting him up and doing some WWE-style takedowns on him. You know, things that you were hoping to see that you saw in his high school tape, and it's now translating finally to college as he is a junior or senior. Is it junior?
Red shirt. Junior.
Junior. Yeah, as a junior this year. So it's finally, I mean, Texas is just going to be able to cycle guys in and out. So having a guy like Caden Stearns, having a guy like Brandon Jones, we've already said Brandon Jones is not a problem. Caden Stearns, again, for the better, actually, that he's out. You know, you get something, being a little bit more proactive with a lot of these injuries, at least frontward facing, they're being proactive at these injuries. And speaking of that, DeGabriel Floyd, that's been a big topic of discussion because linebacker has been a big topic of discussion. It's a huge question mark. Nobody really knows who's going to be the Mac. Jeffrey McCulloch seems to be your rover, but the Mac is a little bit up for grads.
Mm-hmm.
So DeGabriel Floyd was one of the favorites to coming in to be the guy to get that. But coming in, during the physicals, they found he had a herniated disc. They know it's a herniated disc. That's what they found. And there have been players who currently on this team who have played through worse herniated discs than what Floyd currently has. At least that's what I'm hearing from multiple places. What they're doing right now, and the reason Floyd isn't in there, he isn't suiting up, he isn't going through any of these drills, is they are making sure that there are no further complications that have happened or can happen as a result of this herniated disc. The staff and the family want to make sure that everything is perfectly fine to continue playing, because messing around with the neck, not something you want to do. And if he wants to have a career going forward, if he wants to, you know, be healthy going forward or have a career going forward, it's best now to either go through some physical development, some physical training, some physical therapy, rather than risk further injuring his neck and never playing again.
Yeah, concussions and neck problems and spinal problems are stuff that you don't mess with. And getting all the answers, getting every piece of information that you have, especially with a guy who could be here for 4, maybe even 5 more years if the situation were to require it, that's the right process at this point. I know a lot of people, especially considering he enrolled early, considering his stature coming out of high school, really expected DeGabriel Floyd to be able to contribute right away. And I did too. I'm sure you did too, just because of how skilled he is and his demeanor on the football field. Yeah. This definitely throws a wrench in it, but I don't think it throws you know, a spike strip in front of the tires for it. Right. It's definitely something that that they're going to monitor hard, hopefully get answers for soon. And, you know, mental reps are great. Physical reps are a lot better. And at this point, all those physical reps are not going to DeGabriel Floyd. In fact, some of the second team Mac snaps are starting to go to walk-ons a little bit. And that's because in spring football, you know, although there was DeGabriel Floyd and Marcus Tillman who enrolled early, you're missing a lot of guys. You're waiting on the rest of that class, the David Bendas, you know, other guys like that to get here. And so this is an opportunity a little bit for those walk-ons to show themselves and to prove that they, you know, could be deserving of playing time. And Court Jock, who was the second string Mac in practice this past Monday, he was on special teams last year. 57 was running around a lot on special teams. So it's not like this is a guy who's completely new to football, new to Division I caliber play. He's a little bit new to Division I defense. And during the spring, it's not a bad thing to get your walk-ons, your Court Jocks, even your Luke Brockermeyer. There we go.
Which Brockermeyer it is. There's four of them. They're all.
If I mentioned one, a discussion about offer worthiness ensues, and
oh yeah,
and then that'll tank about 20 minutes. But you know, it's
I want to talk about it. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh god. yeah, to Gabriel Floyd's health is definitely the first and foremost concern, and they're looking for answers for it. And I mean, we've repeated this over and over again. You hope for the best for the kid. You hope that they fully recover. But during the spring, you have a little bit more time and a little bit less urgency to determine, you know, not only the problems health-wise with your players, but also how you solve, secondarily, how you solve, you know, the absences those players leave.
Right. And, you know, it's not like we're being vague on purpose. Legitimately, they do not know what's going on, and they're being proactive about it. And he's going in for tests today to figure out more about what's going on with him and what's going on with his neck. And, you know, best case scenario, it's just a herniated disc and he has physical therapy and that's it. Worst case, Joe, you immediately thought about it, spinal stenosis. And spinal stenosis, it sounds bad, and you know it has ended careers before. However, I was reading this from, I believe it was on Surly. Let me go ahead. Bodacious Bevo put it out there. he found that there is a study out there that finds that 5% of the 3,000 players that attended the NFL Combine from 2003 to 2011 had spinal injuries. And including 10 cases of stenosis. All 10 of those were drafted. None of them had spinal cord injuries as of 2016. And players did suffer spinal cord injuries, were more likely to have narrow spinal canals. So basically, it's a known problem. It's happened before. However, it hasn't ended career. It has ended careers. However, it has proven to also be something that people can play through.
Yeah, ended Edge's career. that's the wrestling reference for the podcast.
Again, DeGabriel Floyd, we don't know much. We know the worst case, we know the best case, and that's basically all we can say. But while we're on that subject, let's go ahead and get into our thoughts so far in the problem areas. And we've kind of talked about this a little bit in linebackers and the cornerback room, where, you know, we're actually hearing a lot of good things coming out of the program.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit surprising, some of the positive news, at least to me, just because of what you're losing with two guys who were just at pro day, and Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis, and then especially after Anthony Cook had a little hamstring issue. But it doesn't sound like it's as big as a problem or as big as of a concern that I really thought it was going to be. This is looking way ahead. Anthony Cook's going to miss that first half against La Tech, and it's a good thing for him and for Texas that it's against La Tech. But this is a conference that, you know, who really knew a lot about Antoine Wesley until he really showed up on the scene and got the right offense. That's
right.
Antoine Wesley, right? So that's what's, you know, that's still up and down the Big 12. TCU still has Jalen Reagor. OU's got somebody. They always do. CD Lamb, you know, Jaden Hazelwood, your guy,
Trajan Bridges.
There's going to be some good wide receivers in this conference for years to come. Cornerback has to be, it really is where every part of the defense starts, because if you don't have to shade help to a cornerback, or, you know, if you can just shade help to one side and not two, that frees up a lot of your defense to be able to, you know, get into space and, you know, track the run or track short passes that aren't to that guy, to that side.
Part of the reason Texas's defense looks so great under Holton Hill.
Right, exactly. If you have one guy who's locked down, that takes away half of the field. That is not certain, at least for Texas at this point. A lot of people believe Anthony Cook can do that and believe that Jalen Green can probably do that, but they haven't been able to do it yet, and especially in the case with Green, probably anticipated a little bit more of a longer development curve than Anthony Cook, who was an elite technician coming out of high school. Green was an elite athlete, but played a lot of quarterback and cornerback in high school. Wasn't able to 100% dedicate to the position. So the fact that it's been, you know, pretty spirited with guys like Cook and Kobe Boyce and Anthony Green, and it hasn't become a complaint or a major issue, is really good news for the position in my book, because since that's still my biggest problem and concern heading into the fall on defense, even ahead of linebacker.
And I think one of the biggest reasons we had this concern is the staff has proven in the past to be overconfident at times. They've proven that on the recruiting trail. They've proven that, you know, in the front-facing media. I mean, who remembers in 2017 when they said, this offensive line might be the best we've seen since Ohio State winning a national championship there. And then who remembers what actually the 2017 offensive line looked like? Things like that have happened. We've heard about things like this come out of the, you know, from behind the scenes, from in front of the scenes. It's happened before. So hearing things like, yeah, you know, we're pleasantly surprised of the cornerback room and, you know, the linebacker room. Oh, my goodness. Odele Adeleye is looking like legit. It's something, you know, we're going to give a little bit of pause here before we actually believe it. It's sort of thing, I want to see it with my own eyes before I actually believe that this is the case. Because, like you said, these guys, Kobe Boyce, you know, we've seen last year we kept on hearing, okay, yeah, he's really good in practices, and then you get to Tulsa, and what happened? What happened there, right? So I like I said, I want to see it with my own eyes before I believe this stuff. Because, I mean, you know, I'm hearing Deshaun Jameson is looking good. I've seen tape of him looking good, but I want to see him in a game situation actually look good. Kobe Boyce, same thing. Jalen Green, I want to make sure that, hey, he's actually got the technical side down, or if he goes up against a technical wide receiver who can exploit him in his in possible technical deficiencies, he's not just relying on his athleticism a la Chris Boyd. And then that's a whole other issue. I want to make sure Anthony Cook is actually a guy you can trust with locking down. And we're not even getting to the linebacker part yet.
No, you're completely right. I mean, like you mentioned with Odele Adeleye, like, that's a guy Tom Herman called, what do you say, like, this is the best high school middle linebacker I've ever seen, when right after he signed in 2017. Yeah, because he enrolled early. He had an injury setback in camp last year, and we never really got to see that put into practice, him being the best high school linebacker Tom Herman's ever seen, which kind of fits into your hyperbole argument. We have not seen him between the tackles at all at Texas. To me, he seems like, with, you know, his listed height and weight, a 6'0", 250 guy, and watching his film, it's maybe not, the Big 12 may not be conducive to his best game. So that's something that he's definitely got to pick up on and do a lot better. I kind of feel like if he's at Anthony Wheeler's senior year level right now as a redshirt freshman, it's probably not bad.
It's not bad.
And come fall, when you're looking for, you know, who your linebackers are going to be, it's probably not bad for your backup. But if that's your best linebacker right now, a guy who had a lot of preseason expectations last year, even as a freshman, a little bit undone by injury, and he is the guy that you're going to rely on, that's a little bit concerning. And even more so, especially, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, maybe that to Gabriel Floyd not being a safety net for Ayodele Adeoye. So middle linebacker is a little bit concerned. I'm not super concerned about Rover at this point because it seems like reports have been very positive with Jeffrey McCulloch. I know Edge was kind of his edge and B.
Consistently.
Yeah. Edge and B is where he flashed the most consistency as compared to Rover. But it's starting to sound like he's taken on to Rover a little bit more. And especially with a guy like Joseph Osai over at B, that's probably not a position he's going to overtake at B. So, yeah. You know, linebacker is still definitely a concern. And especially in the Big 12, where, as we saw last year, that's where offenses attack if they find a deficiency. So, I mean, it's still not a bigger concern than corner for me because offenses in this league, at least, you know, I think, are way more pass happy than run happy, especially the class of the league. But linebackers still have a big role to play in that. And if that's going to be where Texas is pinpointed and targeted again,
like they were last year,
that's going to be tough for fans to watch. And it's probably going to be tough for Tom Herman to continue to allow to happen.
Yeah. Again, I mean, consistently reporting that McCulloch has been good is something that was key in your argument because, you know, I've been hearing mixed reports on Ayodele Adeoye, and then all of a sudden, a boom of positive notes on Ayodele Adeoye came out of the program, and I'm like, okay, well, where do these all come from? Because that's not what I've been hearing for the past 2 weeks, but I mean, hey, they're here, so we'll see. Maybe he had like a really really good few weeks, and it's just kind of wow, okay, he's here. But again, I think how we can wrap all this up. And what I've been saying over and over and over again, I won't believe it until I see it. Not fully. I might have some, you know, hey, these cornerbacks are pretty athletic and they have a high ceiling here. And hey, the linebackers, they're pleasantly surprising us. But I'm not going to say, hey, these guys are ready to go and they're ready to take on Big 12 offenses until I can see it with my own eyes. And I think that leads us right into Big 12 offenses going up against them, lightning packages and whatnot. Joe, you've pretty much written down a lot of different packages that Texas runs, and you're going to run those by me. You know, I'm going to let Joe, I'm handing the hostship over to you. Go ahead and lead me through this lineup stuff.
All right. So my dad is a big yellow legal pad guy. I kind of am a yellow legal pad guy. And on this yellow legal pad, I've got notes on major college football websites. I've got a recipe for portobello mushroom chicken. And I've got a bunch of different offense and defensive lineups for Texas. Now, the main Texas's base offense, we'll start on offense. Texas's base offense, the bread and butter, the stuff they love, is 11 personnel. They love having a tight end in. Because of the extra blocker and, you know, extra constraint it adds in the running and pass game. And, you know, that's been Tom Herman's MO his whole career. But there's a lot more, I guess you could say, dynamic personnel on the roster this year. Guys like, I don't know, Brew McCoy. guys possibly like Jake Smith. And then you've got a returning guy in Josh Moore. So, with that in mind, I really don't believe, or at this juncture, don't think that Tom Herman is going to be as hardly married to 11 personnel as he was this past year. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Andrew Beck was serviceable as a blocker, could do the things the tight end position asked for, be a fullback, be that receiver. But they also didn't really want to add other defensive backs on the field, I feel like, by taking Beck off because, you know, aside from little Jordan Humphrey, there wasn't a ton of elite athleticism. Devin Duvernay's fast, Colin Johnson's big, but nobody was, I mean, Texas lacked big plays. So my idea was, okay, what offensive personnel can Texas maybe try and suggest and try and use that would throw wrenches into some defensive game plans. So you've got your base personnel. And so as I have it written down, I've got Colin Johnson as the X boundary wide receiver. Cade Brewer is tight end. Sam Ehlinger and Keontae Ingram in the backfield. Devin Duvernay at Z with John Burt backing him up, kind of or slash being a very similar option. And then kind of a committee at slot. You know, it could be Brew, could be Jake Smith, could be Josh Moore. That's what I kind of have as the base personnel. So I'm going to throw a couple different things past you. There's one I call Y swap. And so you've got Colin Johnson on the X. You've got Devin Duvernay at Z. But what I did is I put the tight end position in Texas's offense is called Y. That's what Andrew Beck was last year. I guess to everybody else, it's thought of as H-back, but H is technically the slot in Texas's offense. So just think of Andrew Beck when I say Y. What I did was instead of having Cade Brewer lined up behind a guard, I have Cade Brewer actually in the slot and Jordan Whittington, you know, as a new option.
As that
H-back, as that Y.
Okay.
So I think what that does is it allows you to use Cade Brewer's receiver skills, which he showed off at Lake Travis, but it also puts Jordan Whittington right in the area to add another constraint with Sam and Keontae Ingram in the backfield. So, you know, it's one of those things where I know Jordan Whittington's been working at running back, and a lot of this was written. I wrote a lot of these down before that switch was really solidified and spring had started, and that's where he was going. So, I mean, what do you think about Jordan Whittington kind of being in that Y spot in the backfield, not ready to take a carry, but kind of a guy who could maybe be batched up on a linebacker there along with Cade Brewer out in the slot and, you know, also maybe matched with the linebacker?
So the one thing I would think about is that the H-back is often used for a blocking surface, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about Jordan Whittington's blocking ability. That'd be the one thing. And so the defense would automatically know, okay, hey, you know, they're not using the H-back as a blocker, which is something, you know, he's a kind of a triple threat option there, mm-hmm. or I guess a double threat. If you move Jordan Whittington back to, let's say, 20 or 21 personnel, which means two running backs or in three wide receivers or two running backs and one tight end, then I think you might have something there. And I'm guessing you already have that out. You already have that game plan in there. But, yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. Maybe have Brew McCoy in there as your H-back instead of Jordan Whittington. Because, I mean, I guess you could have Jordan Whittington come across the front for a handoff. But if you want him to be a blocking surface and also a wide receiving surface, then I would probably put somebody back there who has maybe a better blocker. I'm not sure Brew McCoy is that guy, but he's a bigger guy. He, you know, he's out there as a wide receiver blocking. I'm sure Jordan Whittington could do it as well, but that's just my thoughts on that.
Yeah, formationally, it's a big tip off, but you're not switching your personnel. So maybe it's a fast pace.
You're going in, okay.
A wrinkle you throw in, and it's like, oh, 21's in the backfield instead of 80. Maybe it's something like that. But I completely understand. It would definitely be a quick wrinkle and something to catch guys off guard, because you're exactly right. Jordan Whittington, no matter how good he gets at blocking this spring, probably isn't going to be as good as blocking as a Cade Brewer or any running back possibly with a bunch of experience. So definitely kind of like a hurry up wrinkle, because it won't be, or actually it would be made out of subs since Whittington's not necessarily playing slot, but he's a good type of guy that does provide a formational flexibility, personnel flexibility, to where maybe later on down the road, once you want to teach him that position, you can get there. So I do have another formation that the thing is definitely requires substitution, and that's a little bit, you know, something that Tom Herman isn't a huge proponent of, huge fan of, but like I mentioned, with so many different options he has this year, it might be something that he has to do a little bit more than he wants to, you know, utilize a bunch of different matchups. So this is an 11 personnel package, but I call it the tall package. So
on the boundary
Malcolm
side.
Malcolm Epps isn't eating this one, then you're wrong.
On the boundary side, you've got Colin Johnson. At tight end, you have Cade Brewer. At running back, I put Daniel Young. At slot, I left it ambiguous. I kind of put, you know, Duvernay slash Burt slash Brew. And I know that's it's a little bit of a weird wrinkle. But at Z, I put Malcolm Epps. Now I know this tips the hand immediately. Like this is the jump ball package. This is the tall package. But I've even seen this suggested on our message on Inside Texas before. Like, you know, you've got even last year, you got little Jordan Humphrey, you got Colin Johnson, you got John Burt. You know, why not use it? So this is definitely the jump ball offense, at least personnel wise, but you also have Daniel Young back there to provide a bit of a different constraint. So maybe my question to you is, would you use this personnel since it seems like it telegraphs stuff so much?
Yeah, and I know exactly where I would use it. I would use it in the red zone. That's a red zone package right there. What you do is you have your obvious, okay, jump ball in the end zone here. You have Daniel Young. You spread them way out wide. You sort of have an Art Briles type of offense here where you spread out the defense. You force the linebackers to make a decision between, are you going to go after Daniel Young, who we know is either he's going right down the middle, he's headhunting, or you take a slot wide receiver who might be going down the middle, deep down the middle, or, you know, across the middle. So you force a decision by the defense here. Are you going to give them extra help over the top with Colin Johnson or Malcolm Epps? Who are you giving help to? Then where are you giving help to? Are you giving help to the running back who is a, you know, downhill runner? Or are you giving help to the slot with your linebacker? So yeah, I can definitely see that being actually a pretty good package. I like that idea for you know being a wrinkle in the offense, not being something they use quite often, but, you know, hey, we're in the red zone here. Throw this out here. This is something that we're going to be pulling out against, you know, Oklahoma or something like that, where they're going to throw in a little extra something, something.
Right. It's definitely, like I mentioned, definitely telegraphing. But when you have a 6'7", you know, power forward and Colin Johnson with your options, it's something definitely worth looking at. So now a little bit of a, I guess, natural transition from that Y swap 11 personnel is to go true 20 personnel. It's not something mm-hmm. Texas has done very, very often. In fact, I'm not sure if they've done it at all under Tom Herman, except for maybe a couple snaps. So you go Colin Johnson at X, the slot committee, that slot with Moore and McCoy and Jake Smith, the Duvernay and Burt option at Z, and then you go Sam Ellinger in the backfield under center or in shotgun with Keandre Ingram. Man, I keep doing that. Keontae Ingram and Jordan Whittington, or to be honest, any running back on either side of him. So you've got two running backs on either side of Sam
and Jake Smith.
Possibly Jake Smith at Z. Possibly you could use him at running back in Whittington's spot.
That's what I'm saying.
So,
running back.
I mean, again, another situation that requires substitution. But what do you think of Texas starting to run some true 20 personnel, like some of the, you know, well-known air raid teams in the league, like, I don't know, Oklahoma do?
I mean, Oklahoma State did something similar to that last year, and that really threw a wrench in the Texas's defensive game plan, where I think they went either 21 personnel or 20 personnel throwing an extra blocker in the backfield. So that could definitely be something that Texas has to deal with, or they do have other teams deal with. It's something that you can naturally move to if you're in the offense, where you pull Cade Brewer out to the side, you pull him out into the you know, the Y position out wide. You have your guys already out there, and you just take your H back, whoever that is, specifically Jordan Whittington or Jake Smith, who have played running back in the past, and put them into your backfield. I guess, you know, we keep on saying Jordan Whittington is an H back where, you know, when he's actually a running back, but you can definitely put Jake Smith in there for sure as a guy in your backfield. So you have to figure out how to go up against Keontae Ingram, Jake Smith, or Jordan Whittington in the backfield in any combination of those three. So, yeah, I could definitely see that being something that is another wrinkle in this offense that could be interesting.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's get fancy. That's my goal right now. Let's try something. Let's get a little bit fancy. So here's the formation. You've got Colin Johnson at X. You've got Devin Duvernay at slot. But bear with me here. Let's just imagine that we're on the left hash and
Duvernay.
We're
at
just
slot.
Just imagine okay. We're on the left hash, and you know Devin Duvernay's. I forget the lingo for alignments, but in between the numbers and the right hash, and at Z. You've got Sam Ehlinger. At tight end, you have Cade Brewer. At quarterback, you have Jordan Whittington. And at running back, you have Keonta Ingram.
The Wildcat.
The Wildcat formation. Is this how you see it playing out maybe at Texas this year? Or is there another?
Let me see the paper real fast. Let me go ahead and show that to the okay. camera real fast. I want to see this.
You have to get rid of the slot. I have 12 men on the field in this drawing. So you have to get rid of okay. the slot, but you've got Johnson, Brewer, Whittington, Ingram, Duvernay kind of in between the hash and the numbers, and then Ehlinger split out at Z. Is this the best way you think Texas could use the Wildcat formation with Jordan Whittington, who, you know, did what he did in the state title game, and Keonta Ingram? Or maybe is there another way to utilize Wildcat similarly to how they used Little Jordan Humphrey last year?
I will tell you one thing. I'm 100% certain we'll see something along these lines in the spring game. Like, I'm pretty convinced we'll see it. And Texas threw it out there last year against Oklahoma. I mean, Little Jordan Humphrey has a throwing touchdown. Or is it Colin Johnson?
No, it was Little Jordan to Colin.
Little Jordan Humphrey has a passing touchdown. So that should help his stock draft, right? Or his draft stock, right? But... I can see something like that definitely happening, getting more exotic in that way. Although I don't know how exotic that really the Wildcat package is anymore, because it's not, what is it, 2011, 2012 when it was showcased by the Miami Dolphins, I believe. But I do like the idea of having Jordan Whittington do what he did in the state championship and be sort of a battering ram with 10 blockers in front of him.
Exactly. The only thing you have to be concerned about is, I mean, you and I have seen Jordan Whittington a lot. He's even in high school, he was about as rocked up as a high school senior could be, and has only become a little bit more so, or you know, maybe even more cut as a college freshman under Yancey McKnight.
They find places to put muscle on guys who are already rocked up.
Right. The thing is,
they just find it. It's just like, how did you? There are muscles there.
Right. The thing is do you want to risk his freshman year or a lot of his freshman year the same way you kind of risked Keonta Ingram last year? Do you want to, you know, even put a lot of that pressure, the secondary carries, on a guy like Whittington as compared like you did with Ingram last year? And I think that may be one of the things that really prevents Texas from using a lot of this Wildcat. The other thing that might prevent that is you're getting rid of one of your best short yardage runners when you throw Sam Ehlinger way out into, you know, Z territory. And that's not something I'm sure Texas will want to do, is, you know, remove that threat. And honestly, probably not something Sam Ehlinger wants to do. He's the type of guy that, you know, wants to get into the end zone himself.
Here's something that might be interesting. With a senior center, direct snaps.
Yeah, I did not think about that. That's another wrinkle, and that kind of seems like a Tom Herman thing to do. It that might be in the Mensa page of the playbook, but the
which part of the binder is that in? Way back in the back.
I bet it's
or right in the front.
I don't know. It's on the table of contents in big bold letters. I guess my last. Formation, at least on offense, and I've got some defensive ones, but maybe we can do another time. Is 12 personnel, very, you know, bare bones 12 personnel. You obviously have Cade Brewer, Sam, Keonta Ingram, Colin Johnson at X. I chose to put Brew McCoy as the other receiver And I put Reese Lehto as the other tight end, I guess as TE2. Is that the best usage of 12 personnel? Do you see Jared Wiley maybe breaking into that one of those two tight end spots? And do you really see
have
this?
Have them be an H-back, a true H-back, and kind of on the same side?
So 13 personnel
almost?
So you
have a heavy right side or something like that? Sort of. No, maybe not 13 personnel, but Reese Lehto, instead of like having them on opposite sides.
Uh-huh. Kind of like a goal line looking set.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, you have it's like a shotgun offset eye. You know what I'm talking about there? Where I don't remember. There's a name for that for sure. But definitely having a blocking surface that you can maybe sneak behind as you know he goes out for the block and then ends up behind the linebacker, right, for a pop pass. That would be interesting to see, but definitely I do like that formation. You would definitely use that in short yardage for sure.
Right. And that's the thing. It, like I mentioned, it's another thing about substitutions. It's another thing about getting guys in there. It would mean a lot of different changes might have happened in Tom Herman's philosophy if they go to stuff like this. But the thing is they're developing the talent to operate with this personnel, to put a Cade Brewer and possibly a Jared Wiley or Reese Lehto on the same field. So on the field at the same time. So that's what I've got for offense. I've got a few more for defense, but we can do defense another time.
Yeah, let's go ahead. That was interesting. I really did like that. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to next week's defensive lineup science, as well called the lineup science.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that was fun. But I do have to ask you to get off of football. We got to get off because I do want to know what the heck is going on with the baseball team, man. It has just been.
It was a bad week. It wasn't a 1-3 week. It was a 1-1, 1-2, 2-2. It was a 2-3 week last week. I think for Texas, that's the last 5-game week, which is a huge, huge deal. This team has played a ton of baseball in March, and the schedule is finally starting to slow down a little bit in the midweek, but at the same time, conference play is still about to get into full swing, with the exception of this upcoming weekend, because only 9 teams, because Iowa State doesn't play baseball and throws a wrench into everything in the Big 12. TCU.
What the heck?
Oof.
What happened?
So
2 games. They just blew up.
I don't think I'll be able to accurately put into words a lot of the level of disappointment, or not the level of disappointment, but the level of dissatisfaction David Pierce had over the past couple games.
Talk about blue balls, man. Damn.
Because I'll start with Friday night. Nick Lodolo is a first-round guy. I think he was a compensatory round pick out of high school and still went to TCU, which happens sometimes, but only sometimes. For a top 2 or 3 round pick to continue to go to school, that's pretty rare. And Texas missed him last year in that big series with the Cody Clemens home runs. Lodolo was out for the year at that point, and on this past Friday, he pitched a total gem. Thing is that Bryce Elder went step for step with him. Bryce Elder matched him in basically everything. Both pitched a bunch of shutout innings, but Texas, you know, added 2 runs, I believe, in like the 7th or 8th, and you know, held a lead at Lupton Field, at Lupton Stadium, a place where TCU is historically very good. And pitched a phenomenal 8 innings. Thing is, Bryce Elder went out for the 9th, hit the first batter he placed, and was replaced by Cam Fields. Now, I have no problem with replacing Elder with Cam Fields. A little bit of an issue with him going out after 100 pitches and several times through the lineup. But that's one of the things where it's like, you know what? This is my guy. He's done well all night. Why wouldn't I have faith in him to get 3 more? But he also made the right decision to go get him immediately after the hit by pitch and to try and go from there. Cam Fields, no problem with that decision. He has been hit or miss, at least out of the bullpen. There have been times when he's not been locked down, and there have been times when he has pitched about as good as anybody could ask for. Totally did not have it on Friday for one reason or another. Was wild. I think a couple runs came as a result of wild pitches, and gave up a bloop single that fell as a result. And you know, some amount of blame to be issued to the defense, but you know, it was a game Texas had and lost. Pierce was not happy. It's one of those things. He told me after the game, like, he's still giving Cam Fields opportunities in late game situations. But you know, you have to remember he's despite how good he is and how slowly Texas brought him along last year, he's still a sophomore who hasn't been in a ton of those situations as the closer. Now Saturday, they just kind of got all that frustration out of the way. 13 runs, only allowed one. Blair Henley pitched phenomenally in his hometown. Jack Neely got things on track, and not Donnie Diaz. I don't believe he pitched, or he might have. I can't remember. Saturday was a great, you know, good for what ails you game. Get everything out and set up an important rubber match on Sunday, and Texas did. Now the thing is Coy Cobb. David Pierce had said earlier in that week that he wanted to get some more innings out of Coy Cobb. Made a decision to pull him after four innings, and I asked him after the game why he did that, and he said he was leaving the ball up. Well, after Coy Cobb, every other Texas pitcher also left the ball up and facilitated TCU's comeback. And, you know, not surprisingly, David Pierce was upset that, you know, after his team led for 20-something innings over the entire weekend, they've only won one game. And not only is that bad for his team, that's really bad for a lot of the young arms who really struggled in that Sunday game. Cole Quintanilla gave up some earned runs that were tough charge, but, you know, not pitched well, and Cam Fields struggled again. So it really brought to a point that Texas has a lot of young arms right now who are still making some of the big adjustments necessary for college games. They have, you know, if they wouldn't be at Texas if they weren't good pitchers. And some of the stuff that's going on is that they're not trusting the stuff that got them to Texas to work for them to get out to Texas. A lot of that's tough when you have a whole staff full of freshmen. I mean, last year the bullpen was really inconsistent, but it was a lot of seniors. You had Josh Sawyer, you had Andy McGuire, you had ended up getting Nolan Kingham and Chase Shugart out of the bullpen. This year it's a lot of freshmen and young sophomores. You got Cam Fields. I mean, the oldest couple guys I think are Tristan Stevens and Mateo Boki. Other than that, you got Mason Bryant, Owen Meany, Kobe Kubicek, like I mentioned, Cole Quintanilla, Donnie Diaz. A lot of guys who are getting, you know, despite whatever class they may be, getting their first action at Texas, and there's a lot of growing and adjusting that needs to happen. And it probably hasn't happened as fast as David Pierce had wanted. Or alternatively, a very, very tough March schedule has put a little bit of a stunt in that growth. But it's really coming down to a lot of young arms have to pitch like they know how to, and they have to pitch in a way that shows like, hey, this is why they're at Texas. This is what got them here. And so far, there's been a lot of games, you know, obviously specifically the losses, to where they have not done that.
Right, and you're talking about this team being streaky, and the first thing that pops into my head, and it's what happens with every team that has young players in positions of need, they are streaky because young players flash. And that's what they do, especially when you have talented players. Well, they'll have games where it's just like, wow, this team is amazing. I mean, 13 runs, wow. Eric Kennedy looks amazing. I can't believe he's having such a good year. And then, you know, Cam Fields, oh my goodness, wow, look at him. And he's hitting, you know, 95, 96 on the gun. And then the next thing is like, oh, what the heck just happened? You know, what is he swinging at? Where is he throwing? It's just, that's what you get out of young players. And I mean, you're talking about it, but I'm going to reiterate, it's, if you have a bunch of guys in positions of need where, you know, they're young, they're inexperienced, then they're not going to have the consistency you need at the talent level you need to win you some of these closer games and can and keep you in some closer games like TCU's, you know, the first game at TCU.
Right. It's been a lot of learning curves, and a lot of the problems of last year's team are some of the problems of this year's team with a different cast of characters that does not include Casey Clemons, and especially in the offensive end. Fond may not be the right word, but we went on and on about the season Cody Clemons had last year. What he did was tough to replicate at any ballpark, let alone Dishfault Field. And what one player like that does to impact a lineup is huge. Without him there, it's been a lot different. I mean, we're seeing a different Zach Zubia who, you know, last year got on base, I think, at like the first 38 or 39 games or something like that. That hasn't been the same because there's been some, you know, problems before and after him in the lineup. It, like you mentioned, it's just been a lot of inconsistency so far. There's still some games where they put a lot of good contact on baseballs and they don't fall. UIW very specifically was that, especially Mason Hibler's home run that I think everybody thought was going to be a home run until it landed in the left fielder's glove. There's definitely a lot of inconsistency at the plate. The on-base percentage is not bad, but when you're only drawing walks and getting one base at a time and not moving them over through hits, and the other team is, and that's exactly what happened on Sunday at TCU, it can come back to bite you.
Yeah, I don't know if I can put it any better than that. It's just, hey, you know, people aren't going to want to hear this. Yeah, we got young players.
Right.
You know, kind of the basketball situation the past few years where you're going to get streaky play from young players. Surprise, 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 surprise. Mm-hmm. It's going to be smoother sailing here going forward, especially against Xavier and some teams. You know, I don't know if they're going to have a tough, you know, they played two of the toughest teams in the Big 12. I mean, what, maybe the top two teams besides Texas in the Big 12 in Texas, yeah, Tech and TCU to start the season. So
they still
basically
have
the hardest part of the season is past Texas now.
Right. They definitely still have Baylor, who is one of the other teams and thought of to be at the top of the conference. They don't have to go to OU, but that game doesn't come till the end of the year. I forgot where they're going for Oklahoma State. I think that's in Stillwater. But other than that, the conference is not great this year. I mean, Kansas is a middling program. Kansas State is rebuilding with a new head coach. West Virginia is, I think they're missing a lot of what has made them a decent program in recent years. And OU is missing, you know, as weird as it sounds, they're missing Kyler Murray. So there's definitely a lot of room to continue to do well in the Big 12. And it's going to be imperative that Texas starts winning some series, because if you simply win every series 2 of 3, and Texas can't do that at this point after TCU, you stand a good chance of most likely winning the Big 12 title. And if you can grab a few games of sweeps, you're in an even better position. But if you win every series, you'll be in great shape. Texas can do that from here on out and really, you know, get back into that Big 12 title race. It's going to take a lot of figuring out of the problems that we talked about, especially I think on Sunday, and getting more out of Coy Cobb, to where you may not have to rely on that young bullpen as much as you have been, especially at the end of a week like that. But there's still a good chance for this team to, you know, be able to make a run in the tournament again and even host. I have long held that, you know, both in word and on this podcast, that this team's ceiling is probably a super regional. They can get past it. They could not reach that. But I really do feel like this team, if it plays at its best, will be in a series to go to Omaha. I don't know if they'll win that series. But in addition to that, I feel like they could still put themselves in a position to where they host, not only because of their schedule, but just because they have the capability and the potential to keep winning, win games, and maintain their high rank. Because a lot of the strength of schedule stuff that they have going for them. So, you know, I think it's about 50% done with the season. I think one more game will you know, we'll have him at 28 out of 56. And you know, I know March was incredibly difficult, and the record may not reflect as well as what Texas fans want. But you have to think that after last year, this teaches the team a lot about what it, how, just how good it is against some of the other top ranked teams in the country and what they need to prove. And it's hard to think that, you know, after the past 2 years that David Pierce won't figure something out, because he's done such a good job so far of figuring things out. And baseball is one of those sports where, even more so than football or basketball, you know what to do. And you know, you only can handle, or you only need so much, you know, hey, you made an error. Oh, you messed up. You don't need, hey, you threw a walk, you issued a walk, you messed up. That's not something that you totally need to harp on all the time, but you still have to find ways to fix it and offer that constructive criticism. And I think that's what this staff is, you know, trying to, I think that's something that they're very good at, but every season is a new challenge that they have to try to figure out. And that's what they're going through right now.
But I think we're going to have to end off there. I mean, yeah, so I think that's going to be your fourth and five. Your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on InsideTexas.com. You can find me at JosephCook89 on Twitter.
And you guys can find both of us on the Hornscast channel, along with some other great shows like Pretend We're Football and BC Unplugged, which will come back for the football season. You guys can find us there on any podcasting platform. Just, you know, like iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere. On that note, thank you all for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.